for example, I think the city of Coronado, that drove it a lot is tourism, because they were one of the more bicycle-friendly cities in San Diego. And when we did their bike plan, that was one of our major goals, was how can we get more people out here to ride and increase their, you know, their retail businesses downtown and get...
That's a nice place to ride.
The only flat place to ride in San Diego.
That's my guest, Joe Puncelin. He's with KTUA in San Diego, a planning landscape architecture firm. And they have a contract to create the bicycle master plan for the city of Huntington Beach. I sat in on one of the bike planning meetings in Huntington Beach a few months ago, and that's where we met. And right off the bat, I knew that I wanted to learn more about the process, and my instincts told me you might enjoy learning more about it too. So that's what we covered today. My name, Frank Peters. I'm your host. This is CDM Cyclist, where from time to time I interview advocates in the world of bicycle safety. Thanks for coming back. It's an interesting program today. I have three guests, Katrine Machi, Joe, and John Holloway, senior associate at the firm. And between the four of us, we have a wide-ranging conversation. What does it take to put together a bicycle master plan? Where do you start? Where does it end? And why are cities motivated to put together such a plan? And what can they do with it once it's complete? Cover the waterfront today on the show. I had a couple of reasons to be in San Diego last week, so I called ahead and Katrine helped me set it all up. So I'm sitting in their offices as we get started. Let's listen.
John, as we were saying, I walked into, what do they call it in Huntington Beach? Is it a bicycle planning meeting?
I think they call it the Bicycle Advisory Committee.
That sounds good. And I was late. I walked in and you were at the front of the room, right?
Yeah. And basically we were just introducing ourselves and the project to the committee, because that, at that point, that was their first exposure to the project as the consultants who had just recently been hired to do their bikeway master plan.
So they were just meeting you for the first time, but there obviously was a lot going on prior to that, because you'd already won the contract, right? The city go out to bid for?
Yeah. Like typical for a lot of these kind of projects, there's an RFP, we do a proposal, we compete to get it, and we were shortlisted, interviewed, and selected.
I'll bet it's increasingly competitive to get a bicycle master plan.
It's always been competitive. We're a fairly small firm and competing against some fairly large ones all the time.
You've done these before. But Huntington Beach, how does it compare with some of your other projects in terms of just size or scope? Is it kind of a typical project, or small, medium, or large? Or?
Well, I think a lot of people living in Southern California, coastal Southern California, will appreciate that Huntington Beach's big difference is it's flat. And a lot of the projects we worked for other cities, even within Orange County like San Clemente, where it is not flat. And it's kind of funny. We've talked to consultants in other parts of the country for other projects, the other mobility projects, and we've actually had to remind them that there's topography here. You know, when you've done all your work in Iowa and Nebraska and places like that, you forget. Well, there's a real advantage to that, because it's much easier to do, we'd call it, you know, utility or transportation cycling. You don't have to worry about it. It's like, that's, people I think forget, that's why places like Amsterdam and Copenhagen, why there's so many cyclists. It's not just because of the environment in terms of drivers and cyclists all knowing the rules, is that it's flat. That helps a lot. And I can say that. I've lived in Holland for 5 years. So I've experienced that. And I have to admit, at the time, you don't really appreciate it. But the fact that it's flat really helps. And it's a lot less an excuse to go places when you don't have to worry about hills.
Flat, the other thing that comes to mind is they have a grid. And like in Newport Beach, I often say we have just one of everything. You want to get from west to east, you've got Coast Highway. You want to go down to the peninsula, well, you have two ways to get there partway, but it's much more challenging. So in that sense, Huntington Beach really is like quite a canvas for you, huh? There's a lot you could do.
Yeah, and I think the grid is an important factor too, because it disperses traffic, of course, and it also gives you dispersed routes for cyclists. And that a lot of the grid arterials already have class 2 lanes on them. So those three things, it's flat, it's a grid, there is a pretty substantial chunk of lanes in place now, all are things we'd consider as, you know, real opportunities for Huntington Beach.
Now, a city beginning a bicycle master plan, one of the things I overheard in the meeting was that if a city does have a certified master plan, it qualifies them for certain kinds of grants.
Yeah, you become eligible for BTA funding, which is state funding for some bicycle projects. So basically, you're allowed to apply for that grant funding. And it can be very competitive to get the funding, but it is the first step.
And are those small, medium, or large kinds of grants again?
Usually they're pretty large. Yeah, you would use it more for a recommendation for a project that isn't just your typical paint on bike lane kind of things.
Some new infrastructure or something like that, as opposed to like a study to build some infrastructure?
I think BTA funding you could use it for planning or infrastructure.
As I was driving down here with my wife, we're going to make an overnight of it here tonight, I'm talking again about all the virtues of Huntington Beach again. It's flat, it's got a grid. And then she says, adds to that, a lot of people will come through Huntington Beach on their way to the beach. That's got to be a motivation for a lot of the coastal cities, right? They improve their bicycle access. People will come from far away to...
Yeah, and I think it's pretty clear from what you see in Huntington Beach is that a lot of the things that occur at the beach there, especially over the course of the summer, it couldn't even happen without people doing it by bike. I mean, there's no way everybody can get there in a vehicle. So it's a really important issue for a city like Huntington Beach, especially with one of the name like it has and its tagline. I mean, Surf City USA. I mean, there's got to be access to the beach, and the only way it can really happen is if people don't all drive.
Can you use that kind of the same item kind of in reverse if you were out to double or triple, like the economic vitality of a neighborhood? Is it that simple? Can I say something like that, that a good bicycle plan, bike routes to the beach is a way to do that? Or am I stretching things there, John?
I don't think you're stretching things because studies have shown, and including fairly recently, that bike infrastructure more than pays for itself when you compare it to, say, road resurfacing or something like that, meaning that you can get more people to the area. They may not be able to carry that much or whatever because they're not in a car, but there are more people who also need to eat and buy things like that. So, yeah, you definitely could say that. And you can see it happening in a lot of places. A lot of places are providing more on-street bike parking, you know, bike corrals. And in lieu of a parking space where you can get anywhere from, you know, 8 to 14 bike spaces there, well, that's 8 to 14 people that are replacing what might have been only one or two or three or four people in a car.
It's hard to find those kinds of like multiplication factors with other things you might do, Joe. Any way to get 10 to 14 times more people to the beach?
I think one other thing is promotion. Is actually Huntington Beach already has, like John had mentioned, they've got bike lanes coming to the beach, and for Huntington Beach, they've already got the class one, the bike path that goes along the beach, which is heavily used. You know, getting more people, letting them know how to get to the beach safely, which is the best routes to take, attending classes through Huntington Beach Bicycle Advocates, Jim Powers over there, taking some of his classes on how to ride safely, maneuver through traffic, get kids out there riding more, then you'll get more people out there coming to the beach by bike.
Now, we sure plan your product that you deliver to the city. Is it going to include all of those soft things too, or just striping and lanes and infrastructure?
Emphatically, no, it wouldn't just include just the hard stuff. And frankly, when we were developing our proposal and presentation for a shortlist interview, you know, all this came up. And our take on it, after having visited the city beforehand, of course, was that with the amount of infrastructures in place, well, that's a really wonkish term, but bike lanes in this case, and the class one, the bike lane, the path along the beach, it's probably going to be, because we're early on in the process, that we're going to devote quite a bit more time and effort to all the other things like education and enforcement recommendations and encouragement, those kind of things, instead of engineering.
I never thought of that. I didn't think of that. Now, back to like bicycles mean business is a term that one of my friends kind of coined, bringing more people to the beach, for example. They want to come. Parking is hard to find, if at all. And that 8 to 10 to 12 to 14 factor there. As you're talking to cities, let's just take a typical city. What are some of their motivations for doing a bicycle master plan, John?
Well, you could say that oftentimes, even put it in writing, that their motivation is to become eligible to get state right. funding, which is really federal funding for bike projects. But that's not really the real purpose. Why would they want to do that? In a lot of cases, it's because I think a lot of cities see it as a quality of life issue and a complete streets issue. The idea that you shouldn't have to be forced to get places by car because it's really uncomfortable and dangerous to do it any other way. And that really drives a lot of our work. I mean, in terms of feeling that, you know, we're advocates for that, but also that literally what a lot of our mobility planning is about. Now, you know, Joe and Katrina have some other ideas about some other cities want, but there's also a lot of cities' concerns for greenhouse gas emissions reductions. And that's, you know, a lot of people may not, you know, there may be some controversy whether even that's an issue or not. But a lot of cities do feel that's important. And the fact that there's state legislation now that does drive complete streets and greenhouse gas emissions, and those kind of tie together and trying to reduce the amount of congestion on roadways.
So there is, like a lot of things in life, there's a continuum from one extreme to the other, right? Some cities open to these kinds of ideas and others less so. How would you define that spectrum? Or what are there like stages of what, open-mindedness or awareness of the opportunities? How would you describe that like continuum?
The first thing that came to mind was reactive or proactive. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes we get some cities that are concerned about safety and they're acting a little bit more reactively. And some cities are just being proactive and thinking, how great can we make our city in terms of active transportation? Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, on that same spectrum, some cities aren't doing anything at all, too. Huh? What do you think, like, nudges a city to get started on a path to doing things like we're talking about?
I think one of the things that we've also noticed here in Southern California is tourism. Tourism is a big issue, especially with the promotion of Bicycling Magazine saying San Diego has the best weather, that the number one, you know, city as far as bicycling. Southern California has the best weather in the United States. So you want to draw all the cyclists out here. I mean, we have professional teams that come out here and train in the wintertime. So it's just building upon getting the pros and everyday cyclists out here to enjoy the roads we have down here in Southern California, and building the tourism and the infrastructure to allow people to ride along San Diego Bay or up to San Clemente, up to Huntington Beach by bike. It's doing that and getting, you know, building economic development downtown areas along the bike facilities. For example, I think the city of Coronado, that drove it a lot is tourism, because they're one of the more bicycle-friendly cities in San Diego. And when we did their bike plan, that was one of our major goals, was how can we get more people out here to ride and increase their, you know, their retail businesses downtown and get people.
That's a nice place to ride.
The only flat place to ride in San Diego.
Okay, so we do have the weather, but also the West is known for being, what's the right term, low density and sprawl and all of that. So, well, anyway, we see a lot of great improvements, a lot of progress in bicycle infrastructure and attitudes about it. Seems like there's positive stories about it all the time in the paper, huh? Kind of like a tipping point. Is it indeed the phone ringing more often here, John?
Yeah, I think it is, though I'd say that I think there was a baseball player said he was in, you know, he worked 10 years being overnight success. You know, the fact is we've been working at this for 15 years. And there was a time in the beginning where, you know, a small percentage of my time was spent on mobility projects, whereas now it's all my time. You know, we actually have a mobility division because of these kind of things. It's not just bikeway planning, it's pedestrian as well, and some transit planning as well. But the bread and butter probably really is bikeway planning. And it has gotten more important, and cities are kind of learning, even the ones that didn't before, And for instance, when we heard that when Oceanside got a their League of Bicyclists Bicycle Friendly Community designation, that other cities in Southern California, their traffic engineers were called in to ask, how did that happen? Why weren't we first? Well, they weren't even thinking about it at the time. We know several cities now are. And there's also cases like development along the Bayshore Bikeway in southern San Diego County, the southern end of the Bay. There's a development going in now that was is happening because the Bayshore Bikeway is now connecting all the way around the Bay or coming close to it. And the developer, who we've talked to and met, did it because of that. At the time he bought the building, he knew it was going to happen, but the building was pretty much derelict. Yet it overlooks the San Diego Bay. It was kind of crazy. The city of Imperial Beach agreed to rezone. He's developing something, knocking out the walls, facing outward to the bay where the Bayshore Bikeway passes by, and he fully expects to get most of his business from passing cyclists. That's the kind of thing we're going to start seeing when you have a more complete bikeway network.
It makes me think of like a lifestyle feature. Huh?
Oh, yeah. And it is kind of insane when, with the weather we have here, and in a lot of cases, depending on where you're going, say topography, maybe an issue, but say where it really isn't. The only reason you don't get around by bike is because there aren't good facilities. How is that an excuse? And yet you hear it all the time. And that is the feeling of not being safe on the road and not having a place to park your bike where you're going are the two primary things we hear that prevent people from getting around by bike.
Now, just this week, I think it was Bike San Diego talking about how maybe City of San Diego putting down sharrows in lots of places. You all saw that story, Katrine? You're nodding your head. What was your reaction?
Oh, that's a loaded question.
But the story is that San Diego's maybe a little bit, would the term be lazy, putting down sharrows? There's harder work to be done, and we're not doing it?
That was the article's intent. And then the ensuing conversation afterwards was saying, but it might be the best we can do now, and it still might make a difference in the interim. I haven't even really come to terms with how I feel on it personally. I think that sharrows have a benefit. I can understand why some people might see them as a cop-out because they're really cheap and easy to put down. But often in our plans, we might make a recommendation that's an interim. So we'll say, ultimately, we'd love to see a dedicated bridge with a separated facility. But we know that as a city, you're not going to be able to afford that for another 20 years. In the meanwhile, we need to make it safer for people right now on the street. And a sharrow might be a solution for that. So I don't really think it's a cop-out, but I do understand the point that sometimes you need more than just to have people share the road in order for all users to be safe on the road.
It kind of let a little air out of my balloon. Personally, in Newport Beach, we're about to implement sharrows on Coast Highway through Corona Del Mar. And so excited. It's taken so long to get there. And then this story that developed this week, you know, kind of let a little air out of my balloon because I could relate to it. I can imagine that it's not the panacea. I caught myself thinking it was a panacea. So I suppose at best, maybe motorists that drive over it are going to learn that they have to share the road. And if I like to say, if they take that home with them, we've got a lot of through traffic, right? If they take that home with them, cyclists in their neighborhoods will benefit. But that is a long, slow process. Joe, how about you?
I think that the sharrows, it's a starting point. I mean, it's getting education out there for motorists and cyclists alike to share the road. And there are facilities where you have to share the road just because you don't have the room to put bike lanes. Removing on-street parking is a big issue that consultants and obviously the city and the neighborhood faces. So I believe that sharrows, it's helpful in certain situations, but like Katrine was saying, sometimes it's better to have a separated facility depending on, there's a lot of things to look at like traffic volumes, how many intersections you're coming into, the amount of existing bike cyclists in that area, the adjacent land use. There's a lot of factors that go into it. So, sharrows is a good way to just, you know, get it out there and get the word out that, you know, you may not see a lot of cyclists here, but you may soon see them.
I think I caught myself again hoping that, one infrastructure improvement's going to yield, 3-4 times the number of cyclists out there. So anyway, that was this week's story or last week's story, and it was worthy of pausing. John, you lived in Amsterdam. Did you live there long enough or long ago enough to see transitions like this, the evolution of more and more cyclists?
Well, I lived there when I was 10, 15 years old, and actually the cycling environment then was not as good as it is now. At that point in Holland's history, they were just starting to realize they were getting too car-centric. A lot of people don't realize that, but they started getting there. And unfortunately, places like England went ahead and did it. But Holland made a specific conscious decision to change the emphasis of how they address roadways. And that's what really changed. When I was living there, it was only really just starting. But even then, motorists all grew up riding bikes. Everybody had to go through bike training. And when to get a driver's license, and it is that way today, is a long, drawn-out, expensive process. And it involves a lot of training, making sure everybody understands that they have to share the road. And it was that way then. I mean, you didn't have a lot of the concerns you have here about whether drivers are being attentive or not. You do something wrong in a car in Holland and a lot of the European countries, there are major consequences, including things like losing your license forever. And we just don't have that here. I mean, or it's much harder, much more difficult to happen. There's the vulnerable user idea that doesn't happen here.
I guess we call that cultural differences. Yeah, I'd love to see some of those changes here. That's going to take a long time, too. One thing I heard you say a couple of minutes ago was training. So when you put together a bicycle master plan, Katrine, working with children, that's a good place to start, huh?
That I think I agree is a safe place or a good place to start. And a way of doing that is the Safe Routes to School program. And that is can be a funding mechanism and also a program that comes to schools, and it might support teachers that want to teach lessons in their classroom. It might just be a commuter program, or it could be paying for stop signs and crosswalks in front of the school. So the Safe Routes to School name covers all of those possibilities. For the first time for our workshop for Huntington Beach, we're going to have, coloring sheets for students.
Oh, those are nice. Can I take one of those? I'll scan it, put it in the blog post. That's cute. So what's the idea behind the coloring page?
Well, we want to involve children at our workshop. We also want to make sure that parents don't not come to our workshop because the kids aren't welcome there. And we'll hope to engage the students in a discussion about safe riding. And it would be great if we get them to draw on a map where they ride to school and maybe why they don't ride. We always try to get participants of all ages at our workshops mm-hmm. to let us know where is a good place to ride, what they like, and then places that they're maybe afraid to ride, but they'd like to ride. Mm-hmm. And that does our job for us. That's the information we need.
Is there some kind of like a magic bullet to get started with Safe Routes to School? Is every city different?
I would say a magic bullet is an interested teacher or a volunteer, because we write it into all of our plans, but it really, you need that advocate that has access to someone on the school board that will be supportive. You need a teacher that's willing to let, someone into their classroom and some time. And under the constraints that teachers are working under right now in terms of meeting standards, you have to be really creative on how to work these lessons into the classroom. That advocate out there or the teacher that's already interested, there's plenty of resources in terms of materials and lessons to be taught. It's the time and the teachers and the parents.
You got to find that person, that key person. But one thing Safe Routes to School has going for it is it's got like a great title, right? I mean,
it's a great title. You know what we've been told, though, is at one point we had to call it Suggested Routes to School because it was a liability to call it Safe.
Attorneys get into everything, huh? Oh, that's funny.
Joe and Katrine worked on a Safe Route to Transit, Safe Route to Park project, too. So that is happening in it was the city of La Mesa, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But so it's, Safe Routes to School is a rubric that, it's catchy, sure.
It is.
But you can see how cities are reconsidering that, and just safe routes to get to places people want to get to. But like Katrine said, there was that one case where, oh, safe doesn't, we can't, we'll be held liable if we call it safe. We actually suggested at one time that a city actually mark their safe routes to school on their existing bikeway route signs. And the city attorney of that city said, oh, we couldn't do that. That would open us to liability. So we've never suggested it again. That was his recommendation.
I understand that. I understand. You've got to harmonize. That's part of your job too, right? You're working in a political environment. Joe, I'm looking at you. You could be the best designer and figure out all this stuff, but that's another element to like being successful in your career. I'm involved with the Boy Scouts. We often say with the boys, they learn everything the hard way. Was that true for you too?
Yes. Working with these two, yes. No, I'm just kidding. No, I think the success we've had doing these bike plans is, well, first of all, we're LCI, so we're licensed league cycling instructor. So we know what we're talking about, exactly. And we've been doing this for so long. One of the things that we feel we're good at is being the mediator between the public and then the city, trying to find the balance between what the public wants and what the city can do. And so with a lot of the bike plans we've been working on is, okay, we get the public input from the citizens, and then now we get the feedback from the city. Where do we find that happy medium to get what everybody wants and everybody happy? Now, not all the time everyone's going to be happy with some of our recommendations or what comes out of the plan, but it's the best thing that we can do for the city. It's what's feasible. It's what they can afford. It's what's safe. So it's really just trying to find that fine line. And I think we do a pretty good job at that. And, we've been pretty successful, in terms of kind of helping the cities out in that sort of thing.
So getting public input and then the city's input, I imagine that starts pretty early in the process.
Correct. We, like next week, we're actually having the Huntington Beach workshop, up there next Wednesday night. And we try to get, what we initially do is go out and do our first assessment on what we feel the city, where the existing facilities are, where some of the trouble spots. We collect data. We do some traffic analysis. We do some modeling, and then we go out and look at these areas that comes up in a lot of our field work. And then we take the feedback from the community through online surveys, through our public workshops. We put that all together. Then we meet with the city. We meet with advisory groups, advocates such as yourself. We invite everybody out to even ride with us. We'll actually do a lot of our field work with some of the advocates. They'll tour us around the city and, you know, tell us where.
Do some of your work for you. I hear you.
Yeah. You know, it helps us out a lot, actually, because no one knows the city better than the advocates and the local residents. So we like to, you know, when we get all the input, then we put all together, come up with recommendations, and we have another workshop, and then we vet it through everybody, this time again with the city, with the advocates and the residents, and we, like I said, try to come to a happy medium, what is the best facilities to put down and other programs for the city.
As I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, when you take like the scope of a whole city, you're not going to win every battle, or come your best brilliant ideas aren't going to be implemented everywhere. But you're, again, working with a lot of real estate there. You're going to win some in some parts of town and not so many in the others. Is that part of that happy medium?
Yeah, you do have to pick your battles at times, in the sense of a master plan, like what we're doing for Huntington Beach, it's an overall guidance for the city. We're not looking at details for a specific corridor, what needs to be done, what needs to be at specific intersections. It's more, this is the best facility to put down here, but we still have the rest of the city to look at. So it's finding closing the gaps. You know, the other facilities that would best connect these gaps together, whether there's a block with no bike lanes, what are the best ways to do that? And the master plan, basically what we're doing is just providing the city with the framework to do that, and then apply for the BTA funding to actually look at that corridor and do a more specific site study on what they should be doing along that corridor, whether it agreed with the master plan or not. But at least the master plan provides some basic guidance for future plans.
And what I heard you say there, too, is kind of like the most bang for the buck a little bit, too. The corridor concept is important.
We do a lot of when we develop our projects, it goes through a huge vetting process. We come up with the projects. We run it through a couple models to get some scoring. And then we eventually rank the projects. We vet it through the public. We vet it through the city. You know, what are the projects you feel is right? Does our ranking system make sense to you? And if so, then that's our final list. And then the city can actually go in and decide which of the projects that they want to go after, depending on the funding sources.
Now, maybe just in general, is it a one-year project on your part to put together work with the city, or does it take longer, or what?
It's typically 1 year. 1 year. Depending on the size of the city, sometimes it's 9 months to typically about a year.
As I was listening to you speak again, I was thinking of I was a management consultant when I was your age, and we often say that the lessons you learn on one project don't even apply to the next project. Is it true like that with cities, lessons you learn in one city, do they apply to the next city?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yes, definitely. I think that some of the headaches or the positives you get from working with one city does carry over. Then you know how to handle certain type of personality sometimes, to help you handle certain even traffic situations, like bicycle situations. We might have an intersection that we did in Coronado that might be the same situation we might have in Huntington Beach, and then we bring that forth as far as the analysis we did and, you know, the pros and cons of that. So, yeah, it definitely is it's a building block from project to project, definitely.
Like working with people, and some people can be difficult and others are, like, crazy for the idea. Patience that requires lots of patience, I imagine, huh? Sooner or later, Mia Burke says, right? What's the name of her? Alta Bicycle up in Portland, right? Sooner or later, this whole subject we're talking about is so popular. It's eventually going to appeal to everybody. Patience is what she advocates. Sooner or later, everybody is going to come around. What do you think, John? Am I too optimistic?
I'd like to think that you're too optimistic. But I'd say, though, that it's a lot different than it was even 10 years ago, where we would have public meetings and we would have people show up who actually question, well, why are we even doing this? I mean, nobody rides bikes. Well, it's sort of a chicken and the egg question. You know, it's a catch-22. And now more and more, I think people are understanding that the more you support good facilities, even if you don't ride a bike yourself personally, it does benefit you. And there fewer and fewer people need to have that explained to them. You know, you'll see people once in a while, you'll see somebody riding around with a t-shirt that says one less car. Well, sometimes people need to have that in their face, understand that, yes, it is to their benefit.
That's what I tell people when they get critical of the whole bike movement. I say you should support it. Even if you don't ride a bike, it means easier parking for you, right? Simple as that. One less high rate. So, as you talked about public meetings, we'll wrap up here. But I'm thinking sometimes I've been to public meetings and the public will come out and not everybody's crazy about the idea. And I've seen some of our politicians be very sensitive to the complaints about bad bicycle behavior is what I call it. You know what I mean? Bicyclists running red lights, stop signs, all of that. And then they ride two across. One of my buddies, I heard it somewhere, said the more cyclists you get out on the road, there's like this maybe social pressure or like conventional behavior that might come into play to minimize, or at least if you get more bicycles out there, percentage-wise, the bad bicycle behavior goes down. Are there any like natural cures for bad bicycle behavior, Katrine?
Natural cures. Smiling works really well. and I think you become a little bit more human when you're on a bicycle. I always like it when I encounter a motorist with the window down because I actually tell them thank you when we've all stopped at an intersection and they're actually looking at me to see if I'm going to go in terms of a four-way stop or something like that. So the human element, I think you can't be such a jerk when you're really looking at someone face to face and you can hear them talking to you. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know. I think education helps. Just being a good person, you're not going to blow through stop signs because that violates like the kindergarten rule of budging in line or something. You know, it's.
Another, I can picture another coloring page. No running stop signs on your tricycle. That's great. Yeah. All right. Actually, well, oh, you got one like that?
There is one that says when dad says stop, stop, or something like that.
All right. All right. Anything I haven't covered? Any last thoughts, John?
Just that for anybody hearing this who's in Huntington Beach or rides through Huntington Beach or cares about the routes through Huntington Beach to make sure they go to the city website and fill out our survey for the project, or ideally come to the public meeting next week. We'd love to see them. It'll be at the library.
Yeah, July 20th, Wednesday, 6 to 8 at the Talbot Room at the Central Library.
How about some of my listeners going to want to know more about the firm? What's a good way to learn more about the firm?
KTUA.com.
That's too simple. Keep it simple, huh? All right. Well, John, Joe, Katrine, thanks very much for sitting down with me today. Thank you very much. Well, we're back in the studio, and I bet many of you wish you had a bicycle master plan for your city, huh? Well, I know how you feel. Well, Joe, John, Katrine, they'd love to hear from you. Would you come by the website, cdmcyclist.com, and leave a comment behind, please? And while you're on the site, I have a donate button. If you were so inclined, you could donate, make a little contribution to sustain the show. Be appreciated. Well, that's it for this time. Thanks so much for listening, and good night.